Right now it's Wednesday and time for another edition of The Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
This week, there's one less Republican presidential hopeful. Sam Brownback bowed out, but that did not stop the rest of the GOP candidates from beating up on each other, and on Hillary Clinton, for that matter. The state of Louisiana has a new governor. Mitt Romney has trouble keeping his Obamas and his Osamas straight. And why was Tim Russert waving a Muppet on Meet the Press? We'll explain in a few minutes. And with Sam Brownback leaving the race, do you think it's time for others to call it quits? And if so, who? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also send us your thoughts on the blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ken Rudin is here, of course, NPR's political editor and our political junkie every Wednesday. You can read his latest column at npr.org. And Ken, I understand you have a trivia question for us.
I do. Is it time for it now?
Yeah,
here
now's
we go.
Good time.
Okay. Well, we know that Bobby Jindal was elected governor of Louisiana on Saturday. Of course, he's the first Indian American ever elected governor. He's also the second Indian American ever elected to Congress. Who was the first?
Who was the first Indian American elected to Congress? And as we're saying, we're talking about American Indians as opposed to Indian Indians as opposed to American Indians.
What was the question again? Right. No, Indian, not American Indians like Ben Nighthorse Campbell. No, we're talking about people of descending from India.
Well, tell us a little bit about that election. Bobby Jindal able to get enough of a percentage to avoid a runoff.
Yeah, a 12-candidate race, and he got 54% of the vote. And, you know, we talk about how President Bush suffered from his woefully inadequate response to Hurricane Katrina. Well, the Democrats paid a price as well. Kathleen Blanco, the governor, the Democratic governor of Louisiana, was faulted on many things, both before and after Katrina hit. She didn't run for re-election, and Bobby Jindal, Republican, a conservative Republican, ran, and he won pretty handily against the field. You know, getting 54% in a 12-candidate field is pretty impressive, given the fact that Democrats tried to link him to President Bush, tied him in with the unpopular Iraq War, but it did not work.
Now, he is a conservative Republican.
He is a conservative Republican, has really not been that specific about what he intends to do to help New Orleans, which, of course, is still suffering desperately. I see you're going to talk about that tomorrow's show. But again, he's a very smart guy. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He narrowly lost to Blanco 4 years ago, was elected to Congress in 2004, and again, it wasn't even close.
Let's also talk about Sunday's Republican presidential debate, where the candidates, this time even more so than the last, they sharpened their attacks on each other. Here, just by example, is John McCain talking about his major opponent, as he sees it, Mitt Romney.
Governor Romney, you've been spending the last year trying to fool people about your record. I don't want you to start fooling them about mine. I wasn't a mayor for a short period of time. I wasn't a governor for a short period of time, for 20-some years, including leading the largest squadron in the United States Navy. I led. I didn't manage for profit. I led for patriotism.
John McCain there attacking Mitt Romney. We also saw Fred Thompson take off after Rudy Giuliani.
Well, actually, the debate started by the Fox moderators basically bullying the Republicans into, or taunting the Republicans, daring them to talk ill about you know, each other, of course, which violates Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not speak ill of another Republican. But they went on it almost with glee. And it was interesting because it really started from a Mitt Romney comment, said that he represents the Republican wing of the Republican Party. And I think that's interesting given the fact that Mitt Romney's Republican credentials have been in, you know, dispute for the longest time, or at least conservative credentials, given the fact that he was pro, as we say every week, he was pro-choice, pro-stem cell, you know, pro-gay rights when he ran for the Senate in 1994 against Ted Kennedy and was elected governor of Massachusetts in 2002. So Romney's credentials are also being questioned, but at the same time, he's questioning the others involved, especially Rudy Giuliani. I think it galls a lot of conservatives, the fact that you have a pro-choice Republican as the national leader, the front runner for the Republican nomination, at least at this point, some 70, 75 days out before Iowa and New Hampshire.
As we mentioned, Sam Brownback decided to withdraw from the race. His fundraising problems really were that was the reason he gave his dropping out.
Yeah, I mean, a two-term senator from Kansas, you know, you think that he might have some kind of a edge with social conservatives because he's a very, very conservative senator. But he never made a difference. He never raised much money. He never stood out during the debates. One thing surprises me is that perhaps with Brown back on, maybe there's going to be some coalescing among social conservatives around Mike Huckabee. Because I think, you know, every time I watch him, he seems to be very impressive, very smart. And yet he, too, has not raised much money at all. He has done well. He did, I think, second in the Iowa straw poll in August.
Some big candidates weren't in that.
That's true. But also, he was also at the voters, the values voters thing last weekend, and he finished a close second to Romney in a straw poll. And again, every time he comes out, he does something in a debate, he looks more and more impressive. There are some polls that show him as high as third in Iowa. But again, he also is not raising much money at all, and that's kind of puzzling to me because I think he does certainly acquit himself very well during the debates.
Well, as we mentioned, Sam Brownback withdrew. Should other candidates now withdraw to make that stage in those debates a little bit less crowded? 800-989-8255. And Aaron's on the line from Westland, Oregon. Aaron?
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was wondering if maybe the criteria for whether a lesser candidate should drop out is if they're going to be able to affect the debate, even if they can't win. For instance, Chris Dodd has seemed to be really good at using his position as a candidate to affect the FISA debate and stop retroactive immunity being given to the telecommunications companies, since Obama and Clinton and Biden have all seemed to be moving towards him.
Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is FISA. This is basically the wiretapping controversy. There are candidates like Chris Dodd not making much impact in the polls. Of course, we haven't seen any real votes yet, but they're also having trouble raising money.
Well, of course, you know, if you're Hillary Clinton or if you're an ostensible front runner, you want as many candidates as possible to keep the so you don't have everybody against Hillary Clinton. I mean, obviously, if you have eight candidates running and Hillary Clinton's in the race and she wins, you know, she gets 35% of the vote, that's fine with her because the opposition is split among so many ways. But there are a lot of people, I think MSNBC has already decided that they will not include Mike Gravel in any subsequent debate, given the fact that he is not really. I think one of the criteria should be that are these candidates, do they have anything more as a going for them other than the fact that they're in the debates? I mean, Duncan Hunter, who's been in Congress since 1980, very effective in defense spending.
Ranking Republican on the
Armed Services, right, exactly. And yet, aside from him on the debates, does he have a presence in Iowa? Does he have a presence in New Hampshire? I don't know if he does. And if he doesn't, should he be excluded from future debates?
Mm. Aaron, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And speaking of candidates dropping in, of course, we had a candidate dropping in, sort of. That is, of course, Stephen Colbert joining his name to the mix in both parties in South Carolina. Anna Marie Cox joins us now on the line from Chicago. She's the Washington editor for Time.com, and her take on Colbert's candidacy and that appearance on Meet the Press this past weekend is online at their Swampland blog. Anna Marie Cox, nice to have you on the program again.
Good to be here.
And let's listen to a little bit of Tim Russert's interview with Stephen Colbert on Meet the Press.
The press reaction to your announcement has been mixed. Here's one headline.
Okay.
This was on Thursday. Electile dysfunction. Colbert running for president.
That's good work.
Are they questioning, shall we say, your stamina?
I don't know. I think a lot of people are asking whether they say, is this real? You know? And to which I would say to everybody, this is not a dream, okay? You're not going to wake up from this, okay? I'm far realer than Sam Brownback. Let me put it that way.
Stephen Colbert on Meet the Press with Tim Russert. Anna Marie Cox, you described that as painfully so ironic, it was unironic.
I think that's about it. I mean, you can kind of hear it in Tim Russert's voice, that straining to make sure everyone knows that he gets the joke. He is, in fact, in on the joke. And maybe it is a joke, but it's not very funny.
Mm-hmm. And at one point, he found himself waving a Muppet doll at Stephen Colbert.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In this weird, you know, perversion of his trademark, you know, gotcha questions, where he sort of, you know, traps a politician into admitting something, he got Colbert to admit that his name used to be pronounced Colbert,
mm-hmm.
or Colbert, and then he held up a Bert doll and said, so should we call this guy Bear? And it was like, I'm watching, you know, like the senior television political journalist in all of Washington, like, ask about a Muppet. And I think, I don't know what Colbert's candidacy, this it was supposed to do, but I think what it is doing, it is highlighting just how ridiculous the press coverage can be.
The desperate attempt, as you describe it, for the mainstream media to appear with it.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of pressure right now, especially for people, you know, like Russert and like, you know, David Broder and those types of you know, the senior deans of the Washington Press Corps are now in an age where more people get their news from Stephen Colbert. So they have to appear like they're in on the joke. They can't, like, tut-tut him or away. But in trying to appear like they're in on the joke, I think it just makes them look desperate and sad, to be frank.
And Stephen Colbert's name has even been floated, I guess, semi-seriously in polls.
Someone did do a poll recently, actually trying to figure out if he could get any support. He polled higher than Gravel, or not Gravel, I guess. He did actually beat a couple of, you know, people who you could say were actual candidates, but, you know, it wasn't like he was a front runner. And also, well,
Did you just describe Tom Tancredo as a real candidate?
I know. I guess I had to catch myself there. He pulled ahead of, let's say he pulled ahead of some other people who also are running his jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And who have been running longer, whose joke has gone on longer.
Well, we were talking about that idea of, you know, maybe it's time, given what Sam Brownback did, to just thin the crowd a little bit and make those stages a little bit less crowded.
It would be wonderful, I think, as a journalist to not have to get, you know, to hear a coherent, you know, paragraph's worth of thought from the candidates rather than the kind of quick stuff that we're getting now. I understand that this is a problem mainly that various networks and news organizations have tried to put up a 5% threshold.
Yeah.
But that you run into trouble specifically, as one producer told me, the Ron Paul people will get angry, and you don't want to get them angry. That they have a tendency to, like, you know, storm the gates and create all kinds of, you know, publicity nightmares. And then also there is a problem. Some of the mainstream candidates or the front-running candidates may not want the stage to get that much smaller. It might be beneficial to someone like, say, Mitt Romney to just have to do a sentence or two.
We're talking with Anna Marie Cox of Time.com. Of course, political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get a caller on the line. And this is Jennifer. Jennifer with us from Duluth in Minnesota.
Yeah, my question, unfortunately, is not on your topic, but...
That's okay.
Okay. I'm beginning to think, and I may sound paranoid, that... The fact that during most of the Republican debates and when you hear the sound bites, they're focusing so much on Hillary, it seems like a GOP collusion to try and actually get her nominated because they think she probably is the one they can beat better than maybe, you know, Obama or somebody else. I'm wondering if this is just some kind of GOP ploy because every one of them does it, and the focus on her is getting – it's like the opposite of subliminal, but just as effective.
Yeah,
if you constantly hear her as a candidate, then maybe she will be.
Anna Marie Cox, is she certainly treated as the nominee presumptive?
She is definitely treated that way. And I think that I've heard other people lay out a similar conspiracy theory. And I think that whatever the motivations are behind the Republicans talking about her so much, you know, Hillary is crying all the way to the nomination. I don't think that she's very concerned about whatever machinations the Republicans are trying to, you know, construct here. She really thinks that she can win the general, and she has an amazingly powerful, you know, campaign structure in place. So I think any Republican that thinks she'd be easy to pick off is fooling themselves.
But I think it helps the Republican Party to unite around a theme because obviously they're not united around Iraq. They're not united around President Bush. They're certainly not united around immigration. You can make the case, though, that Hillary Clinton makes them all smile because they feel, you know, rejuvenated and united about that. And also, if you think of what happened last debate, it was really the moderators who basically egged them on about Hillary Clinton. It's not that they brought it up on their own. They were... I think it was Chris Wallace or Wendell Goler or somebody like that from Fox who basically talked about how Hillary Clinton was beating all of them in the polls.
Except
and how do you respond
McCain.
To that?
McCain is the only one that comes close, even close to beating her.
And Giuliani, too, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anna Marie Cox, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Anna Marie Cox, the chief Washington editor of TheTime.com, and she joined us on the phone today from Chicago. Here's a proposed answer for our trivia question. The first Indian American to be elected to Congress. This is Claude in Salem, Massachusetts, says it's Dalip Sond of Pennsylvania.
Well, he has the name right, but Dalip Sond is from California. Elected to Congress in 1957, the answer is correct, from California. Democrat elected in 1956, served three terms and suffered a stroke in 1962 and got defeated in 1962. But Dalip Sond and Bobby Jindal, the only Indian Americans ever elected to Congress. As a matter of fact, Dalip Sond was born in India in 1899.
And we should acknowledge that Don in Sinking Spring, Pennsylvania, knew he wasn't from Pennsylvania, but from California, so he got the answer right. Speaking of, well, political slips of the tongue, Mitt Romney suffered a little bit of a aphasia this weekend. Let's hear what he had to say about the latest tape from Osama bin Laden.
Just look at what Barack Obama said just yesterday. Barack Obama calling on radicals, jihadists of all the different types to come together in Iraq. That is the battlefield. That's the central place, he says. Come join us under one banner.
The YouTube effect, you can't make any mistake, as blitheringly obvious as that one is, without it being ending up everywhere.
Oh, boy, another Romney brainwashing moment, but it was pretty remarkable hearing, listen to that. And you know he doesn't do it on purpose, but it's obviously amazing. I mean, I once had the mistake. I once called Mitt Romney Dirk Kempthorne, and I was embarrassed for over 20 minutes once.
And speaking of mistakes, maybe Rudy Giuliani, famous Yankee fan, comes out for the Red Sox?
Well, here he is, of course. I think, as far as I know, I think Boston is not far from New Hampshire, side of the first primary.
No, really?
I believe that's true. But a lifelong Yankees fan, Rudy Giuliani, says, well, I'm also an American League fan, and I am rooting for the Red Sox in the World Series against Colorado Rockies. I guess it's a safer position to take, considering the fact that the Colorado primary, as far as I know, is not the one they're all participating in. But there are some people who are just astounded. I mean, if Rudy Giuliani could be a Red Sox, wear a Red Sox hat, then anything is possible in politics.
I guess the next thing we're going to see Tom Brady wearing a Yankees hat. Thanks very much. Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, with us here every week, every Wednesday in Studio 3A. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Neil.
I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.